when my early morning day begins, and the sunlight hits my face. I've got the sound of WGN 720 locked in place. Now I've tuned to you, and the day's all right with me. Yeah, 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 yeah. The voice and wake up call, I know that it can only be the Steve Cochran Show.
Steve Cochran Show. 6:10 in the morning. Hi, I hope you had a nice couple of days with Dean and Dave and Andrea. No one was injured in the filming of the shows, I hope. Is that okay? Everything went well?
I think everybody got out of it okay.
We good. Missed you. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. And you and I and Dave played a little golf on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Before I left. And Dave had himself what we call a natural birdie.
Yeah.
Which was pretty impressive.
I did.
So, did
you
enjoy
yourself?
Natural birdie is, you know, like in a tournament, you might have a scramble birdie. Yeah. These are things you obviously know, Mary. Mm-hmm. A natural birdie is when it's your ball, your birdie. His shots made the birdie. There was no help from anyone else in the field.
Well, is there usually?
If there's a scramble or a shamble.
A scramble or, yeah, various events there is.
Okay.
Dave also killed a 150-yard marker.
I did.
Yeah.
And he took a picture of it, too.
Well, he should have. I've never seen it. I've played golf since I was 14 years old. I've never seen it. Dave hit a line drive that shattered a 150-yard marker.
Right. That's the stick in the middle that's white
the barber
and black
pole.
Mary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, Dave, that's impressive.
Yeah, it was cool. I asked him to do it again. I gave him a bucket. We were out there until like almost dark.
Yeah, and I never did.
But anyway, thanks to Harborside. That's a nice place to play golf, and we never get down there. I don't know why. It's easy to get to.
Great it really
course.
Is.
Yeah. Tough course.
Very tough course.
Yeah, especially when the wind's blowing. Apparently it always is. Pat Brady is, our friend Pat Brady is dropping off his daughter at college today. But Pat Brady is so fired up by this court ruling on the Independent Maps Amendment. He will join us later so his head can explode on the show. The EpiPens controversy continues. The woman that runs the company controls the EpiPen business is, by all accounts now, a complete fraud and did a very poor job of covering up for the fact that she's making $16 million and now charging people 550% more than they were paying in 2007. I'm sorry, I was corrected to 18 mil, which is the same neighborhood, just better pools. Also in hour number two of the program, speaking of the Independent Maps, Dennis Fitzsimons will be on. We may take that through to the big story. Does the Republican Party have a future after Trump did it to them, whatever he's done to them? And a redo or a revisit, if you will, along with some follow-up stories that happened to break overnight on big stories of the recent news cycles. But Taib Rashid from and I guess the easiest way to remember Taib, he's the Muslim Marine.
Right.
He's the guy that put his military ID card up online. It went immediately viral and challenged Trump. Said, this is who I am. Who are you? But true Islam is really the hope for all of us getting along and understanding Islam better. And he can talk more about that. So we'll get to all of that coming up, but it's 6:13 in the morning. The Bears play when again?
Tomorrow at noon.
Which is, why does that feel weird to me, a Saturday afternoon game?
I can't remember them playing a day game, a home preseason game in the daytime.
Is there a concert tomorrow night or something? Why can't they put them on it?
I'm not sure why, except that this puts them on more of a regular season type schedule. So it could be a good thing for him. I don't know if it was by design.
Okay.
But
we decided instead of previewing an exhibition game, we would postscript it. Mm-hmm. And on Monday, Adam Hogue and Dan Hampton will be on to talk about it.
Yeah, and this is the big preseason game, too. I mean, this is the one that you really, if you haven't paid attention the first two games, this is the one to pay attention.
I'm on pins and needles. Cubs continue to win.
Well, they win when they don't play. They didn't play last night, and they still picked up ground on St. Louis.
What's the magic number now?
23. Mm. Rhino's number.
They're 18-4 this August. What were they last August? They couldn't have been any better than that.
They were not that good. They were good in August. They were great in September last year.
I mean, they are stepping on the throat of the National League Central now.
It's over.
Yeah,
it's over.
Yeah. And can we settle down about guaranteed rate field? You'll get used to it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
I understand it's a goofy name, but if somebody's here's the conversation that went on in the White Sox organization. Oh, it's kind of a goofy name. How much are they paying us? We'll get used to it. That's mm-hmm. just it. That's the nature of the beast.
Well, we talked about that yesterday. If it had been a company with which people were more familiar, if it was United, if it was Boeing, if they wanted to call it Boeing, people would have said, well, okay, that's how it is today in sports. Naming rights. We're used to it. We have the United Center. We had U.S. Cellular Field. We have Allstate Arena. The fact that it was a company people were not as familiar with, I think, was kind of the shocking part.
Dadgummit!
Yeah.
And I don't know what you do with it, because people are just getting used to saying you go into the cell,
mm-hmm.
you know, for U.S.
Which the White Sox never liked anyway. Because, I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf never liked that because U.S. Cellular was not getting their full bang for the buck.
Right. What do you say about guaranteed rate field? You go into the rate?
That's
you go into the guaranteed? You go into the GRR?
That's what
you know, Kohl's was going to have the sponsorship of that. It was going to be called 30% off with a $20 coupon.
Field.
30%
off with a 20% coupon field rolls off your tongue the same way guaranteed rate does.
Or look how much you saved, field.
Right. That's perfect.
A big circle around it.
Big circle.
Has this been discussed while I was out? The White Sox slogan next year is "It's guaranteed."
Yeah. We sort of kicked this around a little bit the last couple.
Why are you two looking at each other like it's a secret? What? So you kicked it around and what?
Still going to call it this. People still say Sox Park. Yeah. People still call
people
it Comiskey.
No, we're not hiding anything.
Oh, you look at each other like,
Dave, don't tell.
Yeah, we
don't
talked about it. We talked about it. Pretend he's not asking.
There's going to be questions?
People don't call the Sears Tower the Willis Tower, and it's been the Willis Tower for how long?
I never call it the Willis Tower.
Did you guys cover the six Bulls championships over the last?
All right.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers. We won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show for
Lou's
First Call.
Good morning, Lou. How's your hair?
My hair is fantastic, thank you.
Good. I thought you looked great. I saw you the other day. I ran my fingers through Lou's hair, and they got tangled. They got caught.
You know, that is, when you do that, it feels so good.
I thought he was going to say it feels so awkward.
No.
Lou's new hair.
We've known each other a long time. He can run this.
Yeah, exactly. Lou's new hair. Where can we see the video of your hair?
LouHairVideo.com.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. It's more like a mini series, so I wanted them to make it shorter, so just fast forward to the middle.
Lou's hair got a love interest. There's a cute neighbor kid involved, and there's an evil doer. It's Trump's hairpiece that tries to come in, but Lou's hairpiece wins. What?
Isn't it funny that it's not a hairpiece, it's my real hair?
I know, I was just
Isn't
trying
it
to
funny
write the story.
When, you know, years ago when we talked about Donald Trump, it was always about his hair, and now it never comes up?
Yeah, unless you need it for the bit.
Right.
All right, we have a first caller standing by, but let's plug the show. Tomorrow morning, you'll be on at 7 a.m.
7 a.m., all then, the way to 10.
Till 10, and then you're going to answer questions from people on what's wrong with their house and their life and stuff like that.
We do a lot of life questions. I'm sort of like, you know, Dr. Phil with more hair.
Exactly. And if you want to text a question in now, it's much more likely I'll be able to ask Lou if you text a question in. If you do that, don't wait till the end. Because if you're texting at like 6:45 and wondering why Lou's not answering your question, the segment's now.
Right.
312-981-7200 is the number.
A lot of people call my show after 10 a.m. when I'm off the air.
Right. I'll give you Lou's cell number if you need to call him later. But if you want to actually text in, do it now. Dan's on the phone. Dan, let me tell you. Dan, good morning. How are you?
Good. Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing fine. Let me tell you the good news, Dan. You're already a huge winner.
Wow.
Great.
Hello.
Yep.
Dan.
He's very excited.
Dan, you've won an April Airfare. April Airfare. I did it again, didn't I? April Air Wi-Fi. That'd be a good name for a flight attendant. April Airfare.
Cheap airfares to Europe right now, by the way.
April Air Wi-Fi thermostat. allowing you to adjust the temperature of your home's air on your smartphone. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers, home of the 60 Minute Men, 855-955-HVAC. What is your question for Lou?
My question is regarding a water softener on one of the houses that I maintain. They did not use the water softener, and the salt solidified in it. I've tried breaking it up and everything else. I just can't get it broken up. Is there any chance just to get it back working, or do I need to get a new one?
So just in the brine tank, it's like a chunk of salt at the bottom?
Yeah, it's up about, I'd say, two-thirds of the way, and it's pretty solid. I've tried hammering it, banging it, trying not to do damage or anything like that. It's right. Pretty solid.
Can you take it? Can you remove that brine tank and take it outside?
It's in a crawl space. I could probably put some shutoffs on there and get it outside. Yes.
Bring it outside. Turn it upside down, and if you can, just take a fill it with half with water or something. You know, get some water in there to start getting the salt to start to dissolve a little bit, and just hold it there for a little bit. Flip it upside down, and that big cake of salt should just pop out, and then you can put the brine tank back where it belongs.
Okay, very good.
That should work.
And what do you do with your leftover salt? Put it on a cracker? What do you do with it?
Save it for winter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you could use it on the driveway. You throw it away. It'll dissolve. It's biodegradable.
How do you dispose of a big chunk of salt?
In the garbage can.
You could throw it out with your regular garbage?
Oh, yeah.
Why are you saying it like I'm an idiot? I think that's a fair question. You yelled at me there.
I did not.
No, you didn't. Of course you didn't.
I did not.
Hey, Dan, hold on so we can get your information. So here's something that came up in my world the other day.
Tell me.
I'm getting the roof done on the Naperville place.
The roof is on fire.
That's why he's getting it done.
Mr. Fix-It show is a R&B hits song and dance thing.
Maybe that's going to be your bump after when you come back later.
Yeah. Now, the interior garage roof has a spot of mold.
The interior ceiling?
Yeah. And that's because there was a separation on the a portion of the roof and water got in there.
Okay.
All right. So I called my insurance company and said, guys, come take a look at this. And the insurance company, the guy was very nice, very professional. But he said, yeah, no, it's not going to work. You got to do this within a year, and we think it's older than that. Now, I'm here to tell you, it's not older than that.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Your ceiling in the garage, is it drywall?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have an attic space above that area that you can see?
Yeah.
And there's no insulation up there?
No.
Okay. Do you want me to tell you how to fix it?
Well, yeah, but I was just going to make this point so people understand, because so they can make a note of this as well.
Right.
When there's a significant storm that may have caused damage to your roof, don't wait.
Right.
Make the call now.
Right.
Make a note of the storm. Document it in any way, shape, or form you can, because in this case, I'm not knocking the insurance company. They do this every day, but their opinion of when this happened and mine are not the same. And because I waited, really a couple of months, maybe longer, therefore we have this difference of opinion where I'm going to end up, paying for it instead of using the money I've already paid to the insurance company.
Right.
So the lesson that I think people can take from this is, if you think a storm may have damaged your home, your roof, the insurance company will come out and look. They're not going to charge you to look at the house and turn down your claim. They just come down and come out and take a look at your house and say yes or no.
Right.
Because if you wait, I didn't even realize this. You have a year.
Right.
It's a one-year deal on that particular claim. So learn from my stupidity, I guess, is the lesson.
See, and then earlier when you said I was calling you an idiot, I guess.
It was like pre-idiot. You didn't know. You were like psychic. You didn't know I was going to be
like
an idiot.
Like Karnak. I just put the envelope to my head.
So anyway, how do I fix it?
Okay, so if you didn't have any insulation above that, and it's probably just surface mildew and mold, and so you have a couple of products that you can apply to it. There's a company called Healthful Home that makes a product you've heard spots called Fog U Mold.
Yeah.
And that is, you can use that in two ways. You can put that up in that attic space and turn it on, and it'll create this fog up in there to kill any mildew and mold spores that are up there dead. You can also take that same sprayer on that surface and spray it and kill it. Or you can use the fog you mold up in the attic, which is what I would do. Take a little product called Concrobium, which is a mold cleaner, up on a ladder, spray it, let it sit there for a little bit, wipe it away, spray it again, you're done.
And I can get up into the attic space and spray it from a distance.
It's like, you know, remember when they used to do the fogging of, you had like a roach infestation?
Yeah.
It's like that.
Okay.
It's like a canister. It's like fire in the hole, and you turn it on and you leave.
And you can just wear a mask when you do the application?
Yeah, it's completely, after an hour, you're good to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you. Fog you mold, huh?
Fog you mold.
Yeah,
I want a t-shirt.
They're a client.
Right.
There is a couple of texters here. Why does my bathroom fan turn itself on? Well, you got a poltergeist. You got a ghost. I mean, that's clear.
Well, two reasons. You may have what's called an IntelliTouch switch, which is an electronic switch that has buttons on it where it has the light and the fan and maybe even a heater. It's a piece of electronics, not a direct connect switch like, you know, your regular light switch. So my guess is that switch needs to be replaced. Or some fans, and you may not know this, have a humidistat built into them. And there's a switch, but also there's an overriding humidistat. And if you notice that there's some type of sensor on your fan, like a little glass ball or a little screen that looks different from the rest of the lens, that fan could have a built-in humidistat, and that's why it's turning on, which I think are awesome.
Lou, my upstairs is always much warmer than the downstairs. I've tried adjusting vents in various areas. You said something to Steve a while ago about how to fix this problem.
He's an idiot.
No, that's a different thing.
Oh.
I do remember you and I talked about this.
Right.
Where the vents upstairs are wide open. The vents downstairs are what, a third open?
Yeah, about a third. And then when it's really hot, if it's over 85 degrees, then you can switch your thermostat from auto to fan on. But it has to be over 85 degrees because otherwise the house will be clammy. Now, this isn't anything that anybody wants to do, but this will make a huge difference. If it's a two-story, well, it's a two-story home, the upstairs. Your staircase in all of our homes, if you have a two-story home, is like a giant piece of ductwork. And when that AC is running, it just runs down the staircase, which is why the basement is freezing and the upstairs is warm. If you took a box fan at the bottom of the stairs on low, pointing towards the stairs, that's all I need to create a pressure point so that cold air does not cascade as quickly down the stairs, you will feel a remarkable difference on the second floor within about 3-4 hours.
All right, so still go with the third and full open,
right?
But put the box fan at the bottom of the stairs.
On low, so you don't, now the box fan on low, you don't even hear it.
So it's kind of blocking it.
It's kind of creating, it's creating a pressure point, like you're creating your own barometric pressure in your home.
He's a genius.
It's so scientific. Now, I got to do that. It's always hot upstairs in my house.
But the problem, Mary, is it also can create a cold, a low-pressure front that can't create a thunderstorm in your family room.
Right.
So you need to
watch out for the lightning.
And you have to watch out when you come down the stairs and you run into the fan, too, in the middle of the night.
That'll happen.
Dave.
I was up last night trying to find a smoke.
That's what I was thinking. Sober.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Lou, so tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. you'll be on.
I will.
And that's a good thing. And one last thing from the texters. Can you use mold in the house where animals live?
Foggy mold. You can use the foggy mold. It's a registered safe product. I would take them out of the house for an hour, but after that, you're good to go.
And, Steve, could you tell Lou the wink, W-H-I-N-K, worked tremendously? He'll understand. What do you got, like a code thing with the listeners?
The wink is a toilet bowl cleaner that if you have a white toilet bowl that has rust in it that you just have tried everything, this stuff is the bomb.
Last question from Dave.
Lou, my buckthorn is exploding.
He got a one-track mind.
Major problem.
Every week.
Really have to do that.
A one-track mind. Unbelievable.
Hasn't gotten any better.
Did you get the t-shirt yet?
No. That's what I need.
American Weather Makers brings you Lou. See you on TV in a minute.
Love you.
And love you back. 6:32. We'll get back with the big story in a moment on 720 WGN. Very pleased. In a moment, we'll have Taib Rashid on. He hasn't been on in a long time. The Muslim Marine. Tell us about True Islam. And as we continue to try to you know, help everybody here and help ourselves figure out what the real problem is. All right. Before we get any further here, I want to point something out. Our kid of the week from last week, Chloe Healy. You might remember Chloe. She did something nice for her dad. Her dad had gone through a bunch of health problems, ended up losing his leg.
That's right, yeah.
Chloe Healy was honored by the Hanger Company. Remember how she told us she was friends with the CEO?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kid of the week was friends with the CEO.
She's great.
And they shared her Kid of the Week clip with their entire company. And they had a meeting with the company and sent out, you know, a memo, said she's an inspiration to all of us.
How cool. Good
so
for
just
her.
Want to point out as a Kid of the Week follow-up on a day where we got several follow-up stories here, but a Kid of the Week follow-up that this kid's amazing.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
He said very specifically, yes, he's going to still build the wall, but he said, and I'm quoting, I just want to follow the law. We'll work with them. That's a big change.
He hasn't changed his position on immigration. He's changed the words that he is saying. What he has always said from the beginning
that would be a change.
Is that he does not, that he does not want to allow people to stay in this country illegally. He does want to build the wall, but he wants to work
just
with Congress to get
shorter,
things
though.
Done. And that's exactly what he has said from the beginning.
I have words. I have the best words. I'm not changing what I'm saying. I'm just changing the words around. I'm using them in a different order. That's Katrina Pearson. I actually feel badly for Katrina Pearson, who may be the biggest boob of all the surrogates. Because they usually surround her with eight people who know she's full of crap. And then they watch her tap dance, and then they make fun of what she said. You know, why put her on? We need understanding, and the understanding starts with eliminating the basic prejudice that is if you are a Muslim or if you're of the Islamic faith, well, we got to watch you. You're nothing but trouble. When we know that terrorist acts around the world kill Muslims first, and these lunatics are not Islam believers. They have perverted the religion, and they believe in killing, and killing for killing's sake. One of the great the voices for clarification on this is the Muslim Marine, and he joins us now, and it's a pleasure to have him back on the program, Taib Rashid. And Taib, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you again so much. It's always a delight and a treat for me to come speak to you. And so thank you once again for having me.
I appreciate you doing it. You know, we had so much focus on the Khan family and what Trump said and the fight that he wouldn't give up with the Khan family after the conventions. And I wanted to make sure that we followed up with you as well so we get an update on the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. And just to restate what you had said here before and tell us what else is going on in regards to what's new and a better understanding between all of us and Muslim Americans.
Yeah, no, great. Thanks thanks for the opportunity. You know, as member of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, myself and the rest of the members here are continuing to try our best to try to educate our fellow Americans and fellow citizens of the world about what true Islam actually teaches. And, you know, for context for your listeners, if you go to trueislam.com, there are 11 points that we have highlighted there, like, for example, that true Islam rejects terrorism in all forms. True Islam believes in nonviolent jihad of the self and of the pen. True Islam believes in equality of women. There's 11 points that are often misrepresented or misconstrued by extremists to try to recruit. And what we're saying is that these are secular concepts that true Islam actually champions. And that the best way that we can fight extremism is by educating ourselves on what really the true principles of Islam really are. What makes Islam a very much a secular and a practical faith that champions peace and harmony between people, regardless of faith.
Right.
And so that's our effort.
And we need to take the religion piece out of this and the chosen belief that you would follow Islam and that somehow makes you a threat or a suspicious character. Because what do we know? We know, for instance, that our friend Taib served with distinction in the Marines. Tell everybody about your service, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually was very fortunate to be able to serve in the United States Marine Corps from 1997 to 2002. And one of the reasons why I chose to serve in the Marine Corps is because as a member of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community growing up, I was taught that loyalty to your country of residence is part of your faith. And so as a member of this nation, as a citizen of this nation, it is my Islamic duty to serve in whatever capacity that I can. And, you know, this is absolutely critical because as a young 18-year-old impressionable, you know, young man, if I had not received the kind of guidance that our Khalifa of Islam, His Holiness, at that time it was the fourth Khalifa, Mirza Tahir Ahmad, but presently we're under the fifth Khalifa, Mirza Masroor Ahmad, His Holiness, you know, the job of the Khalifa is to guide the community. And this is a proven model that has worked for us for 125 years, where Ahmadis living in all countries all around the world are loyal to the nation in which they live. They live peacefully, and they try to champion these secular concepts and try to lead by their own example and establish peace in the local communities in which they live.
Why is there not more outspokenness and others like you doing this? Is it A, there needs to be more and the effort just is not as loud as it should be, or B, the media is more interested in the negative side of the story, or is it a combination of both?
Well, I think that certainly, you know, violence sells, right? So the more controversial an issue is, that's typically going to get the headlines. But really, recently, what we see is that the trend is changing. In fact, recently, we held our annual international convention called the Jalsa Solana in the UK. We had 38,000 people gather together in the same place, and the Khalifa of Islam, Mirza Masroor Ahmad, was able to teach and advise all of us on the true teachings of Islam. It was attended in person by 38,000 people. It was covered by many media channels, and it was broadcast live where millions of people around the world were actually able to follow along live and benefit from that. And we're seeing the trend change. We're seeing that people are actually starting to pay attention. As a matter of fact, there's two real quick things that I want to share with you.
Sure.
We in partnership with Humanity First and CAPS, tomorrow are holding a back-to-school drive for Bronzeville area residents. And this is, again, part of the true Islam that we're trying to, you know, demonstrate in, by example, that we are here to serve the community. And so we'll have about 600 bags full of supplies for the kids. It's first come, first serve.
Oh, that's great.
From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. At 4421 South State Street. And again, we're trying to bring peace in the community by serving the community, by rejecting violence in all forms, and by really showing that it is through education that we can overcome extremism. And really, we consider this an issue of national security, that it is, you know, when we do things that serve the community, it actually helps us strengthen our national security.
Right, because this is your home. Mm-hmm. This is your home.
Of course.
And since it's your home and it's your country, you don't want anything bad happening here either.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's exactly right. Look, it is all of our responsibility to establish peace. First, we have to establish peace in our own homes, within our own families. And then we have to go out and spread peace within our communities. And if everyone does a little bit of this, I think we can overcome extremism.
Is there a way to reach, though, the young, influential Muslim Americans who see propaganda and the like on social media, Facebook, Twitter?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that our second Khalifa said was that, you know, you cannot reform a country without the reformation of its youth. And so what we have been doing is we've got various organizations within our community, and one of those organizations is Majlis Khudam al-Ahmadiyya, which is the group of servants of men between 15 and 40. And we actually have several programs, several retreats throughout the year. We have, you know, monthly meetings in our local chapters where we try to put forth a very deliberate effort to try to educate our young men, to try to attract them, to try to get them to understand what is their responsibility and what are the true teachings of Islam that they need to, you know, try to adopt and live by, and the standard that they need to live up to in order to meet the requirement that, you know, our prophet, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings of God be upon him, set for us. And we've had tremendous success. Like I said, over the last 125 years, there's not been a single case where an Ahmadi Muslim has committed a terrorist act.
Right, and in regard to bring it full circle, in regards to the Khan family who lost their son, also in service to America, every day Muslim Americans stand watch around the world as Americans serving the military of the country they love in defense of the freedom of the people in this country. And the faster we get to that point to not say, "Ooh, Muslim, oh boy, we better watch them, nothing but trouble," the Trump point of view, the faster we get away from that, the better off we're going to be as a people. All right, so let's mention this again now, because we all need to give back more. And I love that you're doing this. This is back to school tomorrow morning at 4421 South State Street. What is that place you're at? Is it a building or what is it?
It is. We call it the AMC Center. It was the old McCorkle Elementary School.
Okay.
So it's 4421 South State Street. First come, first serve. We'll have a bouncy house there. We'll have a lot of, you know, little pony rides for the kids.
Cool.
We'll have free giveaways of school supplies. So please come out and join us. We would love to have you, whether you want to, you know, volunteer or whether, you know, you have kids who need school supplies, because we're in the back to school season. You know,
yeah, I mean, spread the word. And that's the thing about spreading the word socially on trueislam.com. Just share the site. Share the site so people can see it as well and see the 11 points, amongst other things. Well, Taib, you're always welcome here. We've talked about you coming in. We got to get that set up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would love to come hang out with you guys. One other thing I do want to mention, if you happen to be in the Zion area tomorrow as well from 12 to 2 p.m., we're actually having Humanity First is actually having a food drive there as well. So our goal would be to feed somewhere between 400 to 500 families. So if you live in the area and you want some free groceries, please come on out to 2105 Gabriel Avenue and please give us a chance to serve you.
Well done by you.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
7-Eleven, excuse me, I mentioned this earlier this morning. We're going to talk to somebody about franchising. This is a previous guest on the opening bell. Robert Crisanti is in town this morning, or this week, I should say. Talking about franchising, he is CEO of the International Franchise Association. You know, if you always wanted to open up a franchise, you know, is this your business future? Is this something you ought to be doing? I'm sure Robert would like you to. And Mr. Is it Crisanti? Have I had that right?
Crisanti, yes, sir.
Crisanti.
How are you, Steve?
I am fine, and I hope you're well as well, and thank you for doing this. Give me the upside. Sell me. Why do I need to open a franchise?
It's not for everybody. That's the first thing.
Oh, it is. Okay.
You've got to know. I think, Frank, you know, people fail to see sometimes that franchising is such a key component of the U.S. economy. It's become increasingly attractive to independent and small business men and women and veterans and minorities. And about 20% of the overall franchising business establishments in the United States are restaurants, and 80% are sort of other business lines, which include things like retail and lodging and business services, automotive, and even real estate.
Any of those sectors more likely to be profitable than the others when you have so much of the percentage of the pie being restaurants and food places?
You know, it's interesting. I always say when I talk to people about franchising, they are as diverse as the concepts that are out there. And there's a lot of information that's available on our website at franchise.org. For example, we have a system that works a little bit like the cars.com website, where you can drop down and say, I'm interested in spending, you know, somewhere between $500 and $10,000 or $10 million if you want to buy a hotel. You know, I'm interested in the food service sector, or I'm interested in the professional services sector, pet care, whatever there may be, real estate. And it kind of leads you down a path of narrowing what interests you may have. And then under a lot of the federal government guidelines, there's additional information that the franchisors provide you with regard to unit economics of each store that they have in different areas.
So even if you know nothing about this, your website can help people figure it out. How do you know if you're, you know, with a million startups and a lot of them looking really interesting popping up here and there, how do you know what your risk level is if you're not involved with McDonald's or somebody you know?
Gather information. That's the number one thing. And even huge brand names are no guarantee of success.
Right.
I think it's what we see is a lot of effectiveness from veterans who are getting out of the military because they're very used to working under sort of a strict set of guidelines and executing against those recipes. And so they don't, they're great at managing people and, working towards assisting the customer. And so we see a lot of success there. And there are sectors that are more and less hot and growing faster and slower than others. But exciting sectors are in the area of elder care, for example, and pet care, in addition to restaurants, which are growing incredibly quickly because there's so much consumer demand.
Elder care and pet care. What about old pets? You got anything for old pets?
I think you've just discovered a new franchising.
It's the only one you hadn't thought about. Just shy of a $1 trillion industry creating jobs faster than just about anything. All right. So what's the website again that you mentioned for people to sniff around if they think, well, maybe this is what I can do to get out from under the thumb of that guy I work for?
That's a very common feeling. It's franchise.org, O-R-G, and there's a business opportunity section on the website that leads you through all of our member companies. There are about 3,000 different franchise concepts out there, and I would say about the largest 1,300 plus or so are reflected on that website, and that'll get you a good start into getting basic information that you need.
I appreciate your time, and thank you for doing it and for doing the opening bell. We'll come back and talk to Dennis Fitzsimons in a moment. He's going to try to talk me off the ledge. But at 7:16, first it's traffic, and Mary's here with that, and 7:20 WGN. 7:20 in the morning, my friend Dennis Fitzsimons is here. He used to run the Tribune Company before it slipped to the dark side of the moon for a few years. And fortunately, the revival has gone well. But he has taken a lot of his own time and money and friendships and put them on the line for the Independent Maps hopes that were really squashed by the Illinois Supreme Court yesterday. Now, this doesn't mean this is over, but this is something that I'm very disappointed to see developed. And I don't want this to be what it can be for a lot of people, which is, well, that's the system. We can't fix the system. I assume that's your concern as well.
Well, yeah, and we're... You know, there's deep cynicism out there about the system right now, and that's what we were trying to change, to give people an opportunity to see more contested elections and really change a system that hasn't worked as the framers of the Constitution intended. But clearly it was a deeply divided court. They voted 4-3 to basically deny Illinois citizens the opportunity to vote on this amendment.
And this amendment would take the system as it is, the broken system as it is, where legislative districts in many, many, many cases don't even have opponents running because the system is so rigged it makes no sense to take my time, money, and effort to guarantee a loss, and make it a fair system where bipartisan people would be put on a committee to redraw the map in an appropriate way where it's a fair fight. For both parties.
That's right. Because given the opportunity, both parties would use the system to their advantage. That's just the way politics works. So if the system works that way, you want to try to change it so the citizens, you know, the voters, actually get a better shot and there's more debate, more candidates. So that was the whole purpose of the amendment. And now that we received the decision about 6 o'clock last night, our lawyers have had a chance to review it. We'll sit down and talk today with our board of directors and the lawyers and determine if we decide to petition the court for rehearing, which is a right that we do have.
Right. And that's a long shot. But if you can do it, maybe you do it, because why not at this point? Right.
That's,
with all the effort
correct.
That's gone into it.
I mean, that's the people. You know, all the volunteers, all the contributors were raised over, you know, close to $4.5 million. Those are the people that really are civic minded and wanted to see something positive happen in the state to give voters a better opportunity. And those are the people that you don't want to feel discouraged. So we're going to go till the end to try to make this happen.
Rauner and Madigan getting involved in this on either side, made it better or worse? It's more of an opinion question.
You know, we appreciated the governor's support, but our board of directors was bipartisan, people from all points on the political spectrum. And we didn't want to be identified with any party. But clearly the speaker weighed in. He tried to bring up minority protections, which we actually strengthened in our amendment. So there was no issue in the court decision regarding minority protection.
I think it's an important point to make because, as you know, a lot of the reporting last night was a little sloppy about that and went right down the lines of Madigan's press release that this was to protect minorities, and that's what the court said. The court didn't say that at all.
Court said nothing about that.
What now? What's the next step? What can we do, I guess, as residents and registered voters?
Well, if you can just continue to ask people, as you have been, just terrific, to go to mapamendment.org to get fully updated on what is happening, what the next steps are. But right now, the decision we have to make is this petition for rehearing. But when you read the majority opinion and then you read the dissent by Judge Carmeier, it was like you're in two different universes. So Judge Carmeier dealt with all the claims that the plaintiffs made, where the majority decision only dealt with one of them, and that was the decision that we involve the Auditor General in the process of selecting the applicant review panel. So it's really a technicality. Judge Carmeier deals with it very effectively in his dissent, and again, we're very disappointed, but we've got to keep moving and keep trying to make this happen.
Wouldn't it have been the right thing to do judicially, and you're not a judge and neither am I, but to take a look at this to fairway, to be to focus on the point that was the main point of contention, as opposed to throw everything in the bowl?
Well, it seems to me, and our lawyers made this argument, you have to look at the debates around the Constitutional Convention. What was the intent of the framers?
Right.
And very clearly it was to allow citizens to have a citizen initiative process that could actually make something happen. There was,
and by the way, this is 1970. We're not looking for the founding fathers and trying to reanimate them here.
That's right.
Some of these folks, I assume, are still with us.
Yes, they are, and they've written op-ed pieces,
right,
suggesting exactly what their intent was. So we've seen that, but Judge Carmeier at the end said the drafters of the Illinois Constitution intended that the ballot initiative process allows citizens to actually accomplish something.
Right.
And then in this case, the four judges in the majority, in their reading of the Constitution, it would allow citizens to accomplish nothing through the ballot initiative process. I don't think there's a better summary than the difference between these two, the majority and the three minority justices. So
the problem, and Andrea, you know this, the problem is that this, to a large degree, can really reinforce the public opinion that in a broken system, there is no fix. Mm-hmm. But the one thing you can't do is give up, because if you give up, nothing's going to get fixed. It kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Right. Well, that's the amazing thing that I've seen through this process. I had never been involved in a political effort like this before, but the people, the civic-minded people, the volunteers who went out there, we had one woman who was 90 years old and got 1,000 signatures.
God bless her.
Those
Good
are the people
her.
Who have got to be disappointed today, and that's why we just have to keep trying.
So there's no shot at all of getting this on the November ballot right now?
Well, again, this is the petition for rehearing. Today
right.
is the deadline, but I am told by election lawyers that mid-September is probably the logistical deadline okay. for when ballots could be produced and gotten to the military personnel overseas for absentee ballots. So we're going to keep trying until the very end.
And the rehearing, could there be any sort of adjustment in the issues that the four justices had problems with to address their concerns, or
no.
it has to be represented as is?
As is, because the signatures were on a specific ballot.
Otherwise, you'd need new signatures.
That's right.
Makes sense. We're not giving up. You're not giving up. IndependentMap.org?
MapAmendment.org.
Keep trying to change your website. MapAmendment.org. I promise you, when we plug it, we do it the right way after you correct me. MapAmendment.org. I salute you for all the help you've given and all the phone calls and stuff you've made. But this effort isn't over, because the only way we're going to fix this system and take the power away from those who are abusing it and give it back to the people is to continue to fight for it. That's it.
That's right. We have to work for the voters. And look, I want to thank you for the support and giving me time to try to explain the issue. I've really appreciated it.
MapAmendment.org. Thank you, Dennis Fitzsimmons. All right, we'll take a break, come back. The Steve Cochran Show continues. This is show number, do you know this? This is technically show number 720. Mm-hmm. Now, we're counting this at 722, but this is technically the 720th show of the Steve Cochran Return, 720th show on 720. Is there some sort of serendipitous thing going on there?
No, the party is 10:01.
All I want is for the independent maps to be redrawn the way they should be.
Yeah,
I don't ask for much.
There's still hope.
720 shows. How about that? Congratulations to you two for putting up with me.
Right? Yeah, that's a big, big
congratulations.
Way to go.
You know what Wally would call us if he was here? A drop in the bucket. Move on, Steve.
Right, an hour.
Right.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Decent Americans who support this campaign, your campaign, of being racists, which we're not. It's the oldest play in the Democratic playbook. When Democratic policies fail, they are left with only this one tired argument. You're racist, you're racist, you're racist. They keep saying it. You're racist. It's a tired, disgusting argument.
Look at my African-American over here. Look at him.
I got to tell you, I'm concerned about Donald Trump's health because I believe he has a very unique blindness condition. He can't see what's right in front of him. Hillary Clinton has major issues. It could be attacked every single day. But he's calling her a racist and a bigot. She's been working with inner city minorities for her entire life. Come on. And then he hits her on the health thing when there's pictures all over the internet of this guy eating KFC. This is a 70-year-old fat guy, and he's eating KFC on his private plane and McDonald's and Taco Bell, and Hillary's going to die? Really? Not like I believe both of them are somehow connected to the Antichrist, so they'll probably live for a long time. But having said that, I think he's blind. I think Trump has a blindness that maybe isn't even diagnosed or has a name. He can't see what's right in front of him.
Seeing impaired, okay.
Leanne Caldwell does great work for NBC News and a bunch of other places as well throughout her stellar career. I don't know, Leanne, maybe it's like clutter blindness. You know when a man walks into a room and a woman can see it's cluttered, but the man goes, I don't see anything. Maybe that's it.
It's something because it's at least tone deafness. I would say he's deaf.
Maybe that's it.
And blind.
Maybe that. I just don't. All right, so listen, here's what it comes down to, and I know you've done a lot of background on this. There is more than concern about the down-ballot races going into November. There's concern about what a Trump win or loss does to the future of the Republican Party as it stands. I mean, what do we know in August?
Well, in August, we know that the party is a mess. Right. Is what we know. So what we did is we talked to a lot of Republicans from all stripes. We talked to Tea Party Republicans, Chamber of Commerce type Republicans, social conservatives, and we asked them the exact same questions to get a sense of where they think that the party is going to move November 9th. And beyond, with or without Donald Trump. What has Donald Trump done to the party, and how are they going to deal with it in the future? And we found that there was essentially four different ideas of what could happen, and it's a range of things. It's from completely like the Trumpy or the GOP becoming the party of Trump, all the way to where they try to purge the party. And then another is where there's just a complete stalemate and a previously divided party is just even more divided moving ahead.
So is it equally divided amongst those three or four opinions as to what may happen? Do people seem confused but committed to their belief?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that really surprised me in talking to a lot of these people is that some of the never Trumpers. So, for example, I talked to Katie Packer, who led, who founded a super PAC in the primary,
right,
whose sole purpose was to defeat Donald Trump. And I was really surprised that she actually said that, I mean, she still abhors Donald Trump, but she said that the party moving forward needs to listen and to talk to the people that Donald Trump attracts. So this populist group of people, these working class white men who have felt so disenfranchised from politics, from so many things in American society, as their wages have stagnated, as their jobs have moved overseas. And she admitted that the party has done a bad job of reaching out to this group of people, and that Donald Trump has taught her that it's a group that they need to start to relate to and listen to and perhaps even try to help them.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that in the big picture. But the thing is, you have to be able to do that and address law-abiding, concerned Americans, however narrow-minded their views may be to you and their concerns, because they're as appropriate as your concerns are. But you can't embrace the fringe elements and frankly, the kooks that have signed up for this. Even though it's a small percentage, there are people that are taking down those Trump supporters who legitimately believe he's right for the reasons he's right, because their views are ridiculous and completely anti-American.
Yeah. So, I mean, what Hillary Clinton did yesterday with this speech is she introduced the country to the alt-right. And this group of people who don't believe in immigration, who think that there is a difference between races and that people should live in their tribe. And while this group of people are supporting, for the most part, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton came out yesterday and said, these people are taking over the Republican Party. So she has even further complicated the Republican Party's effort in how they're going to deal with what this party means. Like, before Clinton gave this speech, there was this element of the party that mainstream Republicans, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, either didn't know about or were completely ignoring. And they knew that Donald Trump was kind of their, I wouldn't call him a leader, but associated with them, or espousing some of their values. And now they're almost a legitimate part of the Republican of a Trump party, I should say.
Yeah, well, look, in my opinion, Mitch McConnell is as big an opportunist as Harry Reid was and is. But a lot of this, to me, falls on Paul Ryan. The people you're talking to, how much do they expect Paul Ryan to be able to fix it or save it?
No one specifically said Paul Ryan and that it's up to him, because I think that most people believe that it's up to the party. It's up to a lot of people. It's up to party leaders in the states. I mean, because the party is actually in previous elections, but we have no idea what's going to happen in November, but we're doing quite well at the local and the state level. It's federally, you know, they've had a couple good elections, but they're kind of a disaster federally.
Right.
And so a lot of people are saying this has to be a comprehensive effort of reforming our ideas, figuring out what we are, and we're not just at the federal level, at the very least, we're no longer just the party of no, the anti-democratic party. We have to find, once again, become a party, because this vacuum of ideas is something that many people admitted has completely plagued the party for the past few years.
Leanna, you saying that many moderate Republicans, or some, are saying, let's focus on the Senate races. We have one right here in Illinois between Mark Kirk and Tammy Duckworth. Regroup and try again in 4 years, or let's move ahead and Trump's our guy?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are. I mean, the Republican National Committee is saying Trump's our guy. But then a lot of people beyond that, who especially donors, are saying Trump is not our guy. We're going to do what we can to save the Senate, and we're going to do what we can to try to preserve the House as well. You know, I cover the donor beat actually a lot, and that's the thing. Donald Trump has not raised a lot of big dollar donations this campaign, and he's actually tried. He didn't try during the primary, but the past couple months he has been attending these donor dinners, these donor events, and he's not bringing in a lot of money, because a lot of these large dollar Chamber of Commerce type Republicans are saying, we cannot stand with this guy, and we're going to do what we can to preserve down ballot races.
Right, and to bring it full circle, with the core question here is, what does this mean for the future of the Republican Party? I have never in my life seen more fights between friends over what a Republican is and what Donald Trump is, and should you support him or shouldn't you support him. because the ardent Trump supporters are still out there. But even those who doubt Trump still have such hatred for what Hillary is symbolically and what they think she means that they haven't gotten to that point where they're going, well, the future of the country for the next 4 years is more important than me being right or wrong about Trump. So that fighting that's going on amongst rank and file Republicans with each other, to me, that's the foundation. That's much more dangerous than the fights that are going on at the top.
Yeah. I mean, the first question that we asked every single participant was, what does it mean to you to be a Republican? And we heard a lot of common words, liberty, freedom, small government, very optimistic words like beacon on the hill, those sorts of things. But beyond that, there was a lot of disagreement about what the party is, what policies the party stands for, what policies the party would be willing to I don't want to say cave on, but to alter to kind of address this new movement and this new ideas surfacing in the Republican Party, like trade and immigration. And you know, one of the ideas and one of the paths that we did go down, and because a few people thought that this was the way to go, was that the party actually needs to purge everyone. The party needs to purge the populace. The party needs to purge maybe even the social conservatives, and it needs to be a business, economic, national security-focused party, and that everyone else either needs to align with those or go somewhere else, because purity is more important than this, like, fractured chaos that they've been dealing with for so long.
It's Leanne Caldwell, NBC News, and where do we follow you on social media?
I'm on Twitter at L.A. Caldwell, D.C.
All right. Great talking. I always appreciate you being on.
Thank you. I had fun.
Thanks.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I think it's all a problem.
Let's go live to Dave Ennett in Bourbonnais. Dave is standing by in Bourbonnais now. When did the Bears leave Bourbonnais?
Actually, Steve, the Bears left Bourbonnais like 2 weeks ago.
The Bears have left Bourbonnais 2 weeks ago. Dave, then why are you in Bourbonnais?
Because you told me to come here.
I see. But as the Bears break camp?
Well, no, they really kind of broken camp. They've been working out at Hallis Hall. Okay. I know I'm not
so
playing along
here.
I'm just trying to offer
Let me
up
explain
some.
I'm just yes. trying to set up this call.
Okay.
I'm just
okay.
trying to go to
set Oh, yeah,
up this
the
call.
Bears are breaking camp
so all
today.
All I need from you
okay.
at this point
okay.
is page 58 of the script
okay.
that people use on the show.
Okay,
flip through, get to page 58.
Okay, wait a minute.
I said, so the Bears are ready to break camp.
Steve, the Bears are ready to break camp here in Bourbonnais. This is always a special time of year. Reporting from Bourbonnais, Dave Ennett, WGN Sports.
The old coach is standing by. Not that one. This one. All right, Coach, we're only a week away from the regular season. Are you excited about the Bears?
Good morning, Cochran. You want to explain something to me?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I've been here 2 weeks, ain't nobody come by but a couple of high school kids.
Yeah, I probably should have called you.
You know, I thought I saw you here yesterday, Cochran.
What do you mean?
I looked across the field, I walked over, I talked to you for like 10 minutes before I realized it was a hot air balloon.
Oh, well, I hope you had a nice talk. So, are you optimistic about the Bears?
Some of them are pretty good. I was watching them on TV because nobody's here.
Right. Well, Dave Ennett's there if you need a ride back to the city.
Yeah, you know, I like that sports guy, Dave Peanut. Where do I find him?
Yes, he's got to be around there somewhere. But a lot of people, of course, look to your insights this time of year. How many games do you think the Bears will win?
I think the Bears are going to win. I'm thinking probably 20 games this year.
No. Well, 20 would be good because that would mean they'd go to the Super Bowl.
Well, I'm counting practices.
Okay. All right. I understand. And people ask all the time if you have a particular problem with me, because whenever we have these phone calls, it seems like you're upset with me.
No, I got no problem with you, Cochran. Actually, when you're not around, I get quite emotional.
Why is that?
I don't know, but that emotion is happiness.
What you did to him.
I don't know why, you know. I could save time and just punch myself in the face other than take these calls.
Cochran, you ain't really stupid.
I'm not.
You just got really bad luck when you're thinking.
Yeah, well, there you go. You got one more?
You want to hear about these players or what?
You got one more?
I got one more what? You know, the worst advice anybody ever gave you is to be yourself.
All right, then. That's the coach.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
It is 8:11, and the Steve Cochran Show continues, show number 722. See, the count is up for dispute, because I think if I'm not here, the show count shouldn't continue. And then we have to go back and audit it, and, you know, we have to go back over the course of the last 3 years. So technically, it's show number 722, Dean, and you actually did show 720 on Wednesday.
That's right. So you, I agree with you that it shouldn't be counted as a show unless you are actually there. And if you heard me filling in, you understand why I go along with that completely. That there really was no show on Wednesday.
No, I heard maybe 10 minutes. I thought you did a really nice job.
It was. This is show number 720 is all I can say.
West Coast Dean's going to give us a couple movie reviews in just a second. I know there was some people at the end of the show who wanted to scream at you about Donald Trump, and I don't know if this helped or not. I gave them your cell number.
That's fine. That's fine, because they called me and I had a nice talk, and I gave them your home address. So so that worked out perfectly.
I don't know.
It was really funny. We were getting some texts going. Oh, no Trump bashing today. And then I opened the garage door and let it go.
Well, listen, it's not bad.
I probably would have forgotten about it if people had said, oh, no Trump bashing today.
Well, you know, as Donald Trump says, they're all facts. So, you know, if it's facts, it really isn't bashing. Is it? No.
No, it really was not bashing, because, when you simply repeat the words, the accurate words that he's saying, then you're just saying what's in the news.
Who the hell knows?
All right, so I know you got a lot to do there on the West Coast. So tell me, what's opening this weekend movie-wise?
The movie that I think is most interesting this weekend is called Southside With You. It is the story of the first date that a young community activist, a law clerk by the name of Barack Obama, went on with a lawyer by the name of Michelle Robinson on the south side of Chicago. And it's it's an interesting, really character study. At times, the movie is a little bit slow because it's nothing more than going on this date with these two people and listening to their conversations and, you know, looking at the awkwardness of a first date and getting to know each other a little bit. There are no, like, super big movie bells and whistles in this movie. Believe it or not, there was not a car chase that took place. During this first movie, nobody ziplined down from a high-rise building during this first date.
No violence, no car chases, no gratuitous sex. I mean, that's not a movie.
It's two people having conversations and learning about each other.
No superheroes.
Not a single person flew in from the sky and killed somebody with their laser vision during this.
And yet, you say it's a movie. Hmm.
It's a movie unlike, you know, ones we don't see very often. It's like a play. Watching this is like a play with two people on the stage having dialogue with one another.
Does it work?
And I think it does a little bit. There's a really sweetness and an intimacy to it that, you know, a lot of what is implied in this movie, a lot of what we know happened to these two people It, you know, plays out with this film. You see the beginnings of both of their personalities that we now know so well as president and first lady. So I think it does work a little bit. I mean, it's a little bit slow at times. I wound up giving it a B minus because at times what works on a stage doesn't work so much on a screen. But it's very sweet and it's very different. And as has been pointed out, it's not very often that you see a simple romance between two African American people as the main story in a motion picture. So in a way, it is a little bit groundbreaking. A lot of Chicago in the movie was shot here. You're going to recognize, you know, lots of the scenes and the areas and so forth. So I liked it. It's really different. An actor by the name of Parker Sawyers plays Barack Obama. He's got the Barack voice down, but not too much where it seems like a cartoon. It's sort of the essence of the Barack Obama voice. And a very talented actress, Tika Sumpter, plays Michelle Obama. They're both very, very good in this movie.
And you said, what, a B minus?
It would be a B minus, right.
All right. And where do we go from here for movies that, you know, are not just conversations and people do what movies are meant to be? They fly in and they kill people with their laser vision.
Steve, you'll be shocked to know that there are some movies this week that the studios did not want the critics to see. So I can't tell you a whole bunch about, for example, Mechanics Resurrection. It stars Jason Statham and Jessica Alba. And it's a story about super ex-spy who's trying to free his girlfriend who was captured. That's all I know from the premise about that one. But
why don't we remind people when the critics don't get to see a movie, what does that generally mean?
That means that the studios don't want to brag about the movie. they don't want to show off, so they don't let anybody see it because they're humble that way. They're humble. They're modest. And they don't want people to know that they have got the greatest movie in the world. Otherwise, why would you let a critic see it?
Right, right. It is...
The other movie that's opening this weekend is called Don't Breathe. And it's kind of a suspense horror movie about some young roustabout intruders who break into a house that's owned by a blind guy. Played by Stephen Lang, who you know from a bunch of other scary and horror films, and also the WGN America program, Salem. But these intruders break into this house, which a blind man lives. The intruders think he's blind. He's never going to find us. We can rip off the entire house. But the blind guy's senses are heightened. He kills the electricity, locks the doors, and now they are living in his blind world. Try to escape. So that one screened the other night when I was out of town, so I wasn't able to see it. But, you know, if you like scary movies, suspense scary movies, it sounds like that's your pick of the week.
All right, you're back for your Sunday show, or are you back next week?
I actually will be back next week.
Okay.
We've got a whole bunch of interviews in L.A., over the next few days, Tim Allen, comedian Tim Allen, who's got a new show that's going to be, he's got his sitcom, Last Man Standing, that's going to be premiering on your WGN television in the evening and during the primetime hours. We're talking with Oliver Stone and Joseph Gordon-Levitt about their new movie about Eric Snowden. We've got your Maurice Chestnut and Regina Hall. We've got a whole bunch of movies, whole bunch of stars, whole bunch of gossip. Just, Steve, tons of everything.
Was Tim Allen in to promote it?
No, I'm going to be going to his set on Last Man Standing and talking to him. You know, Steve, Tim Allen does not come to us. We go to him.
I understand. You know, this would be his second hit series. He gets one right. More and he's Newhart.
That's very true. I hadn't thought about that he gets the Newhart Award for successful television series. He's reliable. He's reliable with what he does and delivers it reliably.
One difference would be that he and Button, not a big fan, I can tell. One difference would be between Newhart and Tim is that I think I can't remember which one. Was it Newhart that didn't have the felony drug dealing conviction and did prison time? Was that Newhart?
I don't believe that Bob Newhart ever did have that.
Yeah, I think Tim may have. Yeah, I think so.
They started the proceedings against Bob Newhart, but the stuttering took so long the judge just dismissed the case. It was taking too long. The judge said, I ain't got time for that.
Right, and he was out. All right, safe travels back, Dean. Thank you for your time, and
right,
we'll talk to you next week. That's Dean Richards.
Talk to you Monday. Bye.
And we'll come back. There's a new Bears documentary, 85 Bears Doc. Oh, God, I hope this doesn't get the coach to call in again. 85BearsDoc.com, which you can check out. We'll tell you about that coming up. Michael Chilkis, the actor, has an album out. Jake, have you heard the music? What did I say, Chiklis? What did I say, Chilkis?
It's Michael Chiklis.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
The commish. He has an album out?
He does.
Did you listen to it?
I sure did.
Is it as bad as it sounds?
Yes. No. I shouldn't say yes, right?
You should say what you think.
Then yeah, it's not very good.
I can't believe you trashed him. I'm going to tell him what he's on. And Pat Brady in the 9 o'clock hour, along with information on the EpiPen mess and the woman that runs this company, who sounds like she ought to be in jail.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
20 seconds remaining now. Mike Ditka being hoisted on the shoulders of his team. 13, 10 seconds, 9, 8, 7, 6,
buddy,
5,
Ryan too, coach.
4, 3, 2, 1. Believe it, the dream is reality. The Chicago Bears are world champions of football.
All right, you might be saying, Steve, do we really need another Bears documentary? And I would say to you, you talking to me? I would say to you, yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. Have you ever gotten enough of the 85 Bears? Dave, have you gotten enough of the 85 Bears?
Oh, you can never get enough of the 85 Bears, Steve.
What I'm talking about. Standing by is Rich Linkoff. Rich is one of the producers, if not the producer on this. Everybody from President Obama to Bill Curtis to Mike Singletary and Otis Wilson, who Rich has been working with hard on this, to Willie Gault and the McCaskies and Bill Murray. I mean, you got to, if there's somebody that can speak with authority to the 85 Bears, Rich, you guys went out and found him. Congratulations on that.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so you decided we needed another documentary. How did you get so many people involved, and how many people said we've had enough of this already?
Well, you know, fair question. I mean, when we started, actually, we started filming about a year and a half ago, and actually a little bit before that is when we started talking about the idea. And then the reason we decided to do it was there was no documentary. You know, there was really a couple of different takes on the defense, and they had done some anthologies, but no one had ever done a documentary just on the 85 Bears, which, you know, we were surprised at. And then,
so you were working on this before the 30 for 30 and the other stuff that's since been done.
Yes, there is one. Yeah. So we started, and then 30 for 30 did theirs fairly quick. You know, I liked their production. I thought they did a great job, but they came in and did theirs. You know, we're a much smaller budgeted, you know, local team. Otis is one of our producers. So it took us, you know, a little bit longer, but the product on the screen doesn't reflect that. So, yeah, so in the interim, they came in and did theirs. So there's been, you know, ours will be the second one. Pretty common when you look around the sports documentary world to have a couple of different takes on a subject. So, yeah, we think there's room in the world for ours and theirs.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Our own Dan Hampton is, of course, involved, as are just about everybody, as I said, associated at the highest level with this team. But some people might surprise you that are in this as well. How'd you get the president?
Well, you know, that was just the product of just relentless bugging them, to be honest. I mean, listen, I'd love to say it's our amazing, you know, production skills. It came down to, you know, when you mention the 85 Bears to anyone, that opens a ton of doors. And, sure. And Otis Wilson is our co-producer. He's been an amazing partner. So literally, you know, if we would have been, you know, calling them about the, I don't know, 84 Bears, maybe it would have been tougher. But you know, the 85 Bears alone open a lot of doors. So we cold called a lot of people. You know, we're a, like I said, a local production crew. I'm an attorney by trade, so it's not like we have a long track record, to be honest, in terms of producing films. We've done a couple, but it was just the product of, hey, you know, we're a local team. We're doing a movie about this beloved group of guys, and we were pleasantly surprised at how many people just were incredibly generous.
Yeah, by the way, Rich Lenkoff and Jason Whiteside co-host Legal Face-Off. It's a podcast you can get through WGNRadio.com anytime. Banyanovich is on that as well. Were you involved with all the interviews? Were you present for all these interviews?
Yes, but for a couple that were in L.A., where my production partner and director, Scott Preston, that's where he resides. Yeah, I was involved. We have probably around 30 or so interviews, and I was in on probably 28 of them.
The reason I ask is because everybody's got their own individual memories of where they were when the Bears won the Super Bowl and what that season meant to them and who they were with and their own great memories. Of the people you spoke with, we know our buddy Jared Payton, I'm sure talked a lot about his dad. That would only make sense. Dan Marino's in here talking about, you know, messing up the perfect season, I'm sure. But then what did Billy Deck say? Wasn't Billy Deck about four when this happened? How old was Billy Deck?
Yeah, he was definitely young. You know, he was great. His interview is amazing. You know, we wanted some
flavor.
Current, yeah, we wanted a little flavor. And obviously we didn't want to produce, you know, we didn't want to produce just the same old stories you've heard. So one of our, you know, one of our goals was to provide our audience with things they haven't heard before. So yeah, Billy had some great stories. And you know, we're not just talking about sort of where you were when this happened and what happened back in the 80s. It's very much, you know, a little bit broader and how that team affected Chicago. We've got, you know, we've got the mayor, we've got Jesse Jackson. So a little bit broader, how it affected the city back then and sort of its effect on the current Bears and the current situation.
What was the mayor doing then? What was the mayor doing in 1985? He was out of college.
Yeah, he was actually, I think he was in college, if I recall. He was watching the game at a bar, he told us, on the north side. And he had some, yeah, he had some pretty funny stories to tell about what was going on with him back then.
There's one other person on here that's harder to get than the president of the United States, at least to sit down, unless it's on his schedule, and that's Bill Murray. And as much as Bill Murray loves Chicago and is embedded in Chicago sports culture, Bill Murray has an 800 phone number. If you want Bill Murray to do a movie, you call the 800 number, you leave a message. Maybe he calls you back. Maybe he doesn't. How did you get Bill Murray? That had to be Otis.
Yeah, it's funny. You hear that story that you tell about, you know, having his phone number is exactly true. It's not just like an urban legend. You would think that someone with the stature of Bill Murray, you'd have to deal with, you know, 50 different publicists and agents. Literally about a year and a few months ago, I found myself on my cell phone talking to Bill Murray, and he picked up on the first ring, which, you know, for a kid who grew up watching, I must have seen Meatballs and Stripes 1,000
sure.
times. It was the most surreal moment of my life to be talking to Bill Murray on his cell phone. Yeah, Otis was a big help with that. He goes way back with him. But, you know, we're actually thinking of doing a sequel just about getting Bill Murray. I mean, like a Roger and Me, you know.
That's a funny idea, dude. That is serious. Yeah, I know you might be half kidding, but that is a funny idea.
It was really fun. I mean, and literally, it was 3 weeks ago that we finally pinned him down. He told us that he'll be he has a layover at the airport at LAX for 90 minutes. And literally, within the space of about 20 hours, we put this whole interview together at LAX through a miracle. So, yeah, I mean, that in and of itself is a pretty, you know, funny story that I'd love to tell you some other time. But, yeah, we got him. He was amazing. He was incredibly gracious and generous and just had, as you can imagine, wonderful stories about the Bears.
Sure, Chicago kid. Meant a lot to him, too. All right, so how do people see this documentary? And again, the website for it is 85bearsdoc.com. How do they see it?
So for Chicago, before we air it nationally, which will happen in a couple of months, we are showing it on WTTW on PBS. It'll air Tuesday night at 7:30. It's going to log in around 2 hours. WTTW, again, they've been a great partner. They're doing a fundraiser around it. Otis Wilson will be with me in studio on Tuesday night. So yeah, everyone could tune in on Tuesday. And then if you are interested in seeing a sneak preview right now, you could look at our website, which is, as you mentioned, 85bearsdoc.com. And we have a special sneak preview tomorrow night for some friends and family. Lots of WGN folks will be there. You mentioned Panjanovic, he'll be there. So yeah, those are the ways to take a look at it.
All right, all the best, my friend. 85bearsdoc.com. That's Rich Lenkov.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Don't make me no promises. Don't tell me no lies. Just take a look at yourself.
No name him. Who's singing? Michael Chiklis. Michael Chiklis had two of the great cop shows ever, The Commission, The Shield. Who knew he could sing? Who knew you could sing? Yeah. Who knew you could sing? Michael, nobody knew you could sing.
No, well, people in New England knew I could sing because I've been in band since I was a little kid. So the people in the Boston area knew, but it's just something I haven't had the chance to get out there on a national level until now. You know, my acting career has been flourishing, thank God.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, banging away at it. You know, finally I was able to get into the studio and really do it right and bring a bunch of great musicians together. And I love watching the response to this. Is, you know, there's the initial surprise and shock and everything. And then people are like, hey, wow, you know, and they're into the, you know, the music is there. So.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You can't fake it, right? You can't fake music. You either can do it or you can't.
Right. So, you know, and I've got, like I mentioned before, a phenomenal group of musicians playing here. You know, I've got guys like Andres Ferrero on this record, who's the drummer for Hamilton, which is the hit Broadway musical. And, you know,
Steve Lukather, right?
Steve Lukather of Toto. And I'm just ripping on the guitar on that track that you were just playing and another track as well. So, and just a ton of great guys and these young players as well. So this has been a labor of love and something that I've always wanted to do, and to finally be able to put it out there and see the tremendous response to it thus far has been just fantastic.
So you tell people you want to do this. People in New England knew about it. You've got the thump to do what you want to do in show business. But did you have to produce this with your own dough, or did somebody get behind it?
Well, I didn't want anybody to get behind it. I wanted to do it myself.
Smart,
because
smart,
then it doesn't become about have to. It doesn't become about, you know, imposed anything.
Much better position to be in.
Yeah, exactly. And I own it.
Well, there's that too. Yeah.
You know? Well, you know, but that really, 100% of nothing is nothing. So, you know, I'm hoping that the people respond to it and get behind it, because, you know, and for your listeners, I want to make this sort of a call to action. Go to your streaming sites, listen to us, we add us to your playlists on Spotify and those other sites, or go to iTunes, go to these other stores and buy the record, because I want to tour it. I want to come out and play for y'all. So, in order to do that, you know, I mean, I'm doing this independently. So, you know, things are different in the record business now. You know, it used to be that you play, you know, that, you know, you played live to increase record sales. Now it's the reverse. People, you know, put out records so that, you know, that they can attract people to the stadiums to
see the band. It's so, a complete flip.
Absolutely. A complete flip, you know, so I'm just hoping that, you know, that people are attracted to the music, and so far so great. I mean, I've made a huge licensing deal with one of the tracks that's going to, you know, be heard by a lot of people. So,
cool.
And it's been very, very cool. So, I think it's because the music is speaking to people. It also, the name of the album is Influence. And the reason it is because it's basically, I had to go back before I could go forward. This is very influenced by, you know, my personal music influences growing up in the 70s in Massachusetts, which were a lot of the British rockers, and, you know, of that era, you know, whether it was Led Zeppelin, Queen, sure. Yes, Genesis, The Who, all these great bands that we loved growing up, but brought into this decade, obviously. And no one's really doing that. Like, everyone's either into rap or hip hop. And if they're doing rock, you know, like if you listen to rock format radio, they play all the old songs from 35 years ago. And I just thought, you know, there's a void here. No one's making new rock.
That's true.
You know, that's influenced by that time, but brought into this decade. And that's what this album does.
Well, part of the problem, as you know, is unless you have a certain amount of success and your ability to put out your own stuff, a lot of these kids coming up, no matter who their influence is, they got to throw it on YouTube and hope that somebody finds the needle in the haystack.
Well, right. It's very noisy out there. There's so much, and it's hard to motivate people. It really is. But you know what? Build it, and they will come. And that's why I just, you know, and also as artists, we have to be courageous. We have to put ourselves out there. And, you know, listen, my eyes are wide open. I knew walking into this, because I'm primarily known as an actor first, that there's going to be, you know, a level of skepticism out of the gate, and people are going to be like, oh, God, here we go, you know, and it's a pipe dream and blah, blah, blah. And it's not. You know, this is something that's real, and that something that I've done since I was a little kid. And, you know, again, you have to just put yourself out there and then let the music speak.
All right. There's a definite 80s rock vibe to this, though. So any inspiration?
Oh, and you're an 80s rock chick. This is an 80s rock
little
chick, Michael.
Warren, Twisted Sister.
Well, listen, when you on that particular tune, you know, you listen, that's the thing I also love about the record, is that it's all these different influences filtered through me. So it doesn't really sound like any of those bands. It sounds like me.
Right.
But it'll sound, there'll be a familiarity that you love in there, because you'll hear all those influences from different bands. This first track that you were just cranking is a very Southern fried, you know, you'll hear Joe Walsh in there. You'll hear, Molly Hatchet. You'll hear, you know, this, okay. It's kind of Southern fried that there's also steel guitar. That's a little bit of Fleetwood Mac in there. But then if you play Dime Love or Dad, that's very Santana. You'll hear Gypsy Kings. You'll hear all these different other influences. There was a tune. The other thing is I wrote all of these songs in different places.
Right.
Like where I was shooting. And one of them I wrote in London, and it's very Queen meets the Police, you know, kind of a thing. And I hate to make all these comparisons.
No, but it's called influence, and that makes sense. It ties it all up.
You're right. It does not sound like those bands per se. Like, no one's going to go like, oh, is this the new Queen album? You know, obviously. And I'm no Freddie Mercury, that's for sure. But you know, people are going to hear those familiar influences, and they're going to dig it. And the music is very strong. But, you know, I really feel confident about that. That the music is well put together, really well produced. You know, I did it in my home. Believe it or not, I actually built a studio in my house to do this.
So, well, I think if you're going to, at this point in your life, chase, you know, this passion you've had forever, it's great to be in a position where you can do that. Because, again, it goes back to owning it and deciding what you're going to write and putting it out the way you want to put it out. You're making the call and let the public decide. Right. So, again, it's called Influence. Right. Get your own copy. You know what? Stream 2, download 3. You're careless. You might lose one. And share it with your friends. It's the great Michael Chiklis. By the way, he's not giving up acting, but this is a he's still going to be doing plenty of that.
I'm on Gotham this season, so check out Gotham too, because things go terribly awry. It's crazy.
Well, listen, I've been a fan forever. You've been nice enough to jump on through the years wherever I've been thrown out of, and you're always welcome here. Congrats, man.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
All the best. Michael Chiklis. Again, the album's called Influence. Play that thing again for me. Don't make me no promises. Don't tell me no lies. Just take a look at yourself. There's no disguise. That's headbanging. Isn't that headbanging a little bit?
It's
a little headbanging.
A little winger?
Yeah. Mary's back with your traffic trouble spots on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Surely you must understand the outrage that the American Medical Association has said this is basically the same product it was in 2009, and yet the price has gone up 300 or 400-fold.
So, look, no one's more frustrated than me. I've been in this business for 25 years.
But you're the one raising the price,
so.
Though. How can you be frustrated?
My frustration is there's a list price of $608. There is a system.
EpiPens, which are needed by millions of children, the price goes from $50 10 years ago to $500 or $600 today, and you're making $18 million a year. You understand how that looks.
Brian, look, I understand better than anyone that facts are inconvenient to headlines.
Wow. It's a line from Animal House, right? Except in this case, blind, narcissistic, and dumb is no way to go through life. Joe Manchin is the Senate, the father of that woman you just heard of from. Her name is Heather Bresch. Made $18 million as the head of Mylan. Is it Mylan Pharmaceuticals? Yeah. And made $18 million while the price of an EpiPen went up 550% since 2007 in the company that she runs, when the actual cost of the epinephrine in these EpiPens is $3.
A friend of mine was stung by a bee a few weeks ago, went and picked up a prescription for her EpiPen and said, well, thank God for my insurance. It saved me $600. And I literally laughed. She said, no, I saw it with my own eyes. The cost of the pens were to her were $35, and it said on the receipt, your insurance just saved you $614.
So there's a lot of blame to go around in the insurance game, but you're wondering why insurance is so expensive? You're wondering, look, there's no excuse for what Mylan Pharmaceuticals is trying to do that I'm aware of. Sherzad Abdukadirov is standing by, and I certainly hope I came close on the pronunciation of your name.
That was perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And a research fellow in the Regulatory Studies Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, talking about the regulatory process and institutional reforms and food and health and all the complexities that come with it. It's really easy for me and a lot of other folks to just slam this woman and slam the pharmaceutical industry. I don't like the blame game per se, but how much of it is just profiting because they can?
Well, it's certainly, if you look at this situation, it's really a perfect storm of several things happening all at the same time. So on one hand, you actually have a legislation that Congress passed in 2013 that required, not really required, but incentivized many schools around the country to stockpile on EpiPens. So that drives up the demand. But at the same time, there were several things that happened that actually reduced the supply of EpiPens and equivalent products on the market. There was a competing company that actually had to withdraw its, recall its product and actually discontinue its line that was a main competitor to EpiPens. And there was another company that was supposed to actually have a generic version of EpiPens, actually even last year, but for a variety of reasons, they've ran into difficulties and their application for generics was actually denied in March of this year. So it really created an opportunity for a situation where there was an opportunity for Mylan to be effectively a monopolist in this case, and they could essentially set the price.
Yeah, charge whatever they want to charge, and regardless of the consequences. So as I understand it, the way this generally works is, and you touched on it there, is I have a drug and the patent's going to expire in, say, 3 years. So in the last 6 months to a year that I have the patent, I'm going to crank the price up like somebody selling plywood in Miami with a hurricane coming in, because you need it, and I'm going to try to maximize my margin for as long as I can until that generic clears. It seems like when you find out the generic doesn't clear, you're just asking for trouble if you decide you're going to crank the price up the way they have, which takes me back to the CEO. Is she an idiot?
Well, they have their own calculations, and I'm not sure whether they still think that their move on EpiPens was wise. But I think it's important to realize that this is not just Mylan, and this is not a singular case.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So actually, there was a recent report by the GAO that looked into the cases of extraordinary price increases, say when prices increased more than 100%, between 100 and 500, in some cases even as much as 10 times for the same drug. And they found there was at least 300 cases of such extraordinary price increases between 2000 and 2008. So this is a systemic problem. And one of the biggest causes that they found is lack of competition, as you see in the case of EpiPens and Mylan's ability to exploit that situation.
The pharmaceutical industry argues and will argue, and I think with merit, that it costs a lot to find a drug that works. And in doing so, the research and development part of this is extremely expensive. And if you look at the same way you look at venture capital, and maybe there's 10 deals you try to strike, one of them maybe comes through, it's an expensive game to be in to begin with. But there are fair price increases, and then there's price increases that are clearly just jamming it to people that need the drug. Martin Shkreli was the world's most hated man for a short period of time before he was minimalized. Not surprisingly, he's defending Mylan. Is there something here that is defensible in the specific case of Mylan for the price increase they've asked for that you've seen?
I'm not sure. Well, I can't really speak to their specific cases, but I think it would be a mistake for us. We have to look at it in a systemic way, which we shouldn't be in a position where we rely on the goodwill of companies to hold their prices low. As you can see with Mylan and many others, it's not just Mylan that have exploited these type of situations. So if we are talking about long-term solutions, we really need to look into how can we increase competition so we have many competing drugs on the market that we can turn to, so we're not really relying on a single company, on a single product for life-saving cures.
Well, if there's a kid that dies because he got stung by a bee and the EpiPen ran out and I couldn't afford the $600 because I made the mortgage payment and I rolled the dice, is Mylan liable? And again, why are they rolling the dice in this manner when they have the patent and the monopoly that we've discussed for an extended period of time?
Well, actually, this is an unusual situation where there was a competitor and there was supposed to be a generic.
Right, but it's not happening, so they're going to have this all to themselves for an extended period of time, correct?
Yes, well, at least a year. Hopefully the generic will come through. And I don't know what exactly their calculation is, and it's really, I guess, on them.
Well, fair profit within legal boundaries is great. You know, capitalism is great. I'm a capitalist. I think it's completely fair. And I don't think people are entitled to tell companies you can't profit because I need something that you make and you're charging too much for it. But there's too much. And then there's greed beyond belief. And this is such an outrageous move. And by the way, karma is what it is. The stock for Mylan has just fallen through the floor. So there's people that are involved in this already who think they see the end coming. So you're an expert on this, Shehrzad. I'm not. When we go through this, do we need some sort of emergency price controls legislated in by the government? And is that even possible?
Well, it's hard to say what exactly would be, like, if you have extraordinary situations, whether we need some type of regulation. But then again, as we saw with the sort of previous legislation that essentially drastically increased the demand for EpiPens, is that often regulations come with unintended consequences. So I would be worried to go into these short-term solutions without thinking through all the different potential downsides. And I think ultimately what we really should look for is the long-term solutions where we don't have we don't run into the situations where companies are in a position to drastically increase prices and be essentially monopolists. We really need to make sure that we have many more drugs already available, so we're not relying on companies to do the right thing.
Right, because you can't count on everybody doing the right thing. I want to get Andre in here, but a texter points out EpiPens are about $100 in Canada and Europe, also being made by Mylan. Why is that the case in other countries? Do they have different regulations?
Yes, they do. And in fact, I think that's part of the part of it is the fact that we actually do have a more or less not necessarily free market system, but certainly we don't have the specific price controls. Other countries do. So in that case, they have a negotiated price between a company and their healthcare agency.
Shehrzad, what can be done, though, I guess a segue to that, what can be done to lessen the government regulation on these life and death drugs? Because as Steve pointed out earlier, if somebody dies because they can't afford the EpiPen, they're going to face an even bigger problem with a major lawsuit or more than one.
In general, you mean to make more drugs available? We certainly need to look through the entire process, because right now, as you pointed out, that the development process is so expensive and it costs so much to first develop and then also to go through the regulatory process to actually get the drugs approved. And this is actually part of the problem here as well, the fact that generics were essentially delayed, that we definitely need to start looking into this and how we can actually streamline the process and start reducing the regulatory burden so we actually have more companies getting into the pharmaceutical business and producing more alternative drugs.
Or maybe a gradual price increase rather than a 500% increase in a six-month period.
Well, you can't. You also can't. You can't take a drug that people need, be the essentially the only people making it, and then say we're going to give you price breaks. We've got some programs you can get involved with and sign up for those, and we'll see if you qualify. I mean, that's just a big steaming pile. Shehrzad, please keep talking about this. We'll have you back to do it as well, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That is Shehrzad Shehrzad Abdukadirov at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University with a doctorate in public policy to talk about. And again, look, Shehrzad was careful in what he said because he wants to be fair to it. I have no interest in being fair. If somebody's decided in creating a 500 or 600% profit on a drug, that's beyond the pale. That is beyond anything that's even remotely fair. You can't even see fair from there.
No, I agree. If you have a drug that you're the only one that makes and you want to raise the prices, that's why I said it should be some sort of a gradual increase, not $65 to $600 in a six-month period.
Well, I'm trying to see, too, what the stock price
dropped.
I guess
it would be.
The stock price, I believe, in the last week, or the stock value in the last week, I think has dropped $5 billion. I think that's the number. But I'd have to find the story again.
I have to buy these for my son. So I was just so relieved when I checked his before he went back to college to make sure they weren't expired so I didn't have to get another prescription.
I mean, that's terrible. That's terrible to have.
Isn't that awful? And then I realized, oh, they're expiring in September, but they usually go 6 months over. You can keep those things for 6 months more and they work, according to my sister, who's a pharmacist. So I do, but I was just so worried, but hopefully by then they'll have this all figured out and the price will be back
down. Is there something special about the trigger mechanism or something? I mean, is there something exceptionally technological about the pen?
Oh, no, it's super easy to do. I mean, we've had to use it on my son three different times when he was younger. Not so much now, but I never did it. My husband did it to him, but it's super easy to do. You just, you know, and you can practice too. They send you a practice one.
So essentially you are paying for the epinephrine in the pen, right?
Yes, it comes in the mechanism.
The drug is in the mechanism. Again, the epinephrine in an EpiPen, a $650 EpiPen, the epinephrine costs $3.
Yeah, I think you're paying for the package, you know.
$3.
It's
unbelievable that it shot up that month, that
$3.
Much well, in 8 months.
Well, I mean, that's mob tactics. You know, as a matter of fact, organized crime called and said, don't include us in this. It's 9:23, back in a moment on 720 WGN. John Acosta's here. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
A couple of plugs, if you don't mind. There is a... Is it tonight?
Tonight
at the Rouse?
Yeah, at the Rouse Center in Crystal Lake.
This another Blue Thunder production?
No, this is not. No, this is TLS. It's their 20th anniversary. They're helping veterans transform their lives. Transitional Living Service, and they do phenomenal, phenomenal work. And they're having a big four-band, 20-year fundraiser celebration tonight to raise money, and I'm hosting it.
They help homeless vets?
They do.
Okay. We need to hook them up with our friend Mark Doyle.
Absolutely,
Rags.
Yeah.
Because they could probably help each other.
All yeah.
Right. So that's tonight. So what do people do?
Actually, this is kind of cool. They can just contact TLS for tickets tonight. Go to the Rau for tickets as well, rau.org. And it's kind of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. It's a good cause.
All right. Now, don't we have a couple of Iceman productions coming up?
We do on September 24th, Saturday, September 24th. You and I will be at Governor State University at the Performing Arts Center with Pat McGann and Rocky Laporte
in a Cochrane comedy performance.
And it's going to be so much fun. And both of those guys, you know, we've worked with them before. Tonight's show, David Letterman, they're so funny and so good. And we do, and the people at Governor
State.
That'll
be a good show.
Great.
I'm telling you, that will be one of the funniest shows you've ever been to.
Yeah, I totally agree. Both Sharon Morris and Lana have been phenomenal. through Governor State. To get tickets there, you go to centerticket.net, or you can call the box office directly at 708-235-2222. And that is September
24th. That's an Iceman production?
That is an Iceman production. And then just a little quick thing on Saturday. This is kind of cool for WGN listeners. I'll be at McGonagall's Pub in Barrington, Laughter in the Loft, and I'll be doing it with Tim Banker and Hannah Stanley from WGN.
Well, there you go.
We're doing a little stand-up on Saturday night at
McGonagall's Pub.
In Barrington.
What, do they have a stage there or something?
Upstairs, yeah. They're okay. It's through the Row, so it's sort of an extension, and it's kind of a neat thing. They're building a little theater there. It'll be a lot of fun, so I'm looking forward to it.
Barrington's beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's a really cool little downtown, and all that.
And that's right, like in the middle of downtown, isn't it?
It
on the corner,
right across from the train station. Beautiful place, second floor, Laughter in the Loft.
And I don't own a horse, but sometimes I like to drive out to Barrington, just hop a fence, and just start riding one of the horses around.
Well, they don't even have streets. You've got to bring your horse.
Oh, it's BYOH.
It's bring.
Bring your own horse. Is that what it is? Yes. That's what you're trying to tell me?
I think that's what I was saying.
Okay.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Music is a world within itself, with a language we all understand.
I think Stevie Wonder would be as good as if he could see.
With an equal opportunity for all to sing, dance.
There's something about Stevie Wonder not singing that maybe makes the music better. Imagine the movie he sees in his head. He's the best, isn't he?
They can feel it all over.
Sir Duke played this when I was a disc jockey. You're a disc jockey, you're playing the same stupid eight records. Yeah, like I ever played eight records. The same stupid eight records an hour. There's some songs that just made you happy. That song came on, you go, yeah. 9:42. Pat Brady, man, what a roller coaster, right? Pat Brady's taking his second daughter to college today. Are you in San Diego?
I am in San Diego, and my kids are told that they can only go to school in places where Dad and Mr. Cochran can play golf.
I'm telling you right now, his daughter Maeve is in Tucson.
Yep.
University of Arizona.
Yes.
And your daughter today is being dropped off. This is your second daughter, right?
Yes, Kelly.
Kelly is being dropped off at San Diego State.
Yes, very nice.
Are we running out of warm areas? You got kids left.
I think Patrick's thinking U of A and Grace is thinking San Diego State. So we'll be covered. We'll play Torrey Pines and then we'll go back and play Ventana.
Pat, I like the comment that you put on Facebook today. It was very cute. I'll be out there more than you'd like.
Yeah. Yeah, the great thing about Pat Brady being your dad is he might come out for lunch.
So. Well, they're good kids and they're good students, so I'm happy for them. It's
they're
a
great
good
kids.
Adventure.
They're great kids. All right, so you and I talked briefly last night, and I don't expect Dennis Fitzsimons to get into this at the level you and I would, but how much of what happened yesterday in the Illinois Supreme Court in shooting down the possibilities of a FAIR amendment on the ballot this fall, the FAIR MAP amendment, the mapamendment.org website that we've talked about, the independent maps controversy or conversation. How much of this is Mike Madigan?
Well, it's the eighth wonder of the world in Illinois that a decision that relates directly to the donor base of the Illinois Supreme Court goes in favor of the people that supported him. And to answer your question, Justice Kilbride, who authored the opinion in 2010, was up for retention. And the Supreme Court justices need to get a 60% yes vote to stay on the bench, and Kilbride, who's from downstate, was in big trouble because of some of his rulings. And so Madigan raised $2.5 million for him. And lo and behold, when it comes up to the decision to protect Madigan's majorities, a decision that, or a law or a change in the law that 80% of the state agrees with, Kilbride authors the opinion to keep the status quo. And it would not be a big deal, but for Kilbride should have recused himself.
And absolutely. Secondly,
yeah, why is he writing this opinion? And the Tribune editorialized on this in 2010 about the fact that this is exactly what Kilbride would do. But the system, and I hate to sound like Donald Trump, is rigged. And they basically said you get to grade your own papers and the system's going to stay the same. And the people that are getting killed are the taxpayers.
As a lawyer, how does this work behind the scenes? Would the other justices say to Kilbride, you need to step down on this one?
No, I don't know. I mean, there might be arguments that it's not a conflict. In my mind, it is, and I think to most people, common sense-wise, it is. And you would think that they would do that. I don't know how they the inner workings are. They don't really reveal that. But to me, it's conflict of interest 101. But the sad thing is we pay for it. And this change that desperately needs to be made in the way we choose or draw the legislative maps is not going to get done. And it's all rigged.
Yeah, and this is not, and let's be clear on this. This is not to advantage Republicans. This is to disadvantage the power structure of Mike Madigan and to create fair elections, including in multiple districts where nobody runs against the candidate who's been seated because they have no chance of winning.
Yeah, I think it's close to 70% of these districts are uncontested. And it is. It's not just a Democrat issue. Republicans have done the same thing.
Of
but
course.
They offer.
But and Republicans would do the same thing if they're in power in 10 years, or less than that now, when the map is redrawn, and we want to stop the Republicans from doing the same thing.
Yeah, and this amendment that they were trying to get done was a very rational and reasonable solution that's done in other states. In states like Iowa, they use a computer to do it. And the arguments that the Democrats are making on how somehow that this disadvantages minorities is total nonsense. And that was addressed in the amendment. So if you're, you know, I heard you earlier this morning, and it's something you should be angry about, but we need to keep engaging on this because it has to be changed. This reform is one of the most important things I think we have going right now.
Pat, is there, I guess, maybe we should talk about the irony in we're asking for this to be changed, this partisan process to be changed by judges who are elected, appointed, even though they're, I know the Supreme Court.
Well, these are elected.
But, yeah. They are in some way, shape, or form partisan in many ways.
No, they're political. They're political hacks. That's what they are, and that's what this opinion's all about. And if you take $2.5 million from a party in interest to a piece of issue before you as a judge, you should recuse yourself. But you're absolutely right. This system needs to be merit selection, not elections.
Can it change though?
Well, I think most people want it to change. Well, yeah, absolutely. What was the number? 80%? 70%? How many people in Illinois back this?
I think I saw numbers as high as 80, probably closer to 70 on more of the polls.
All right, well, let's say it's 7 and 10.
Yeah, in term limits, too, but I didn't want to confuse the issues. But these reforms that the governor's talking about, they're necessary so the state runs better. You know, these wouldn't be an issue if things were going well.
But they're not. And here's the other thing. If you don't support term limits are for both parties.
Right.
This, again, term limits are to protect you from people who don't need to be in the job because they're exploiting it. That includes Republicans. So everybody goes, term limits, oh, that's a Republican thing. Explain to me how term limits is an advantage for Republicans.
You know, I've never supported term limits because I just believe that the voters, that's, you know, what the voters do. But in this state where it's so bad and it's so rigged and so messed up, It's absolutely necessary right now.
If you have term limits for the president of the United States, you should have term limits all the way down to dog catcher.
Yeah, the guy that's running the show down there went to Springfield when you and I were in second grade, Steve.
It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Well, he's right in the prime. In the prime of all the good he can do. It's outrageous. And, you know, I was talking to some people off the air about this earlier as well. I believe the Republicans did themselves an unbelievable disservice in blowing off having hearings on the Supreme Court replacement of Scalia, because you have to go with the basic premise that we have to have it our way. If it's not our way, we can't have it, when in fact you have the votes to turn down the nominee if you don't take the nominee, Merrick Garland, and believe he's the right person for the job. So you're basically saying the Constitution doesn't matter. And Scalia was a strict constitutionalist and somebody that believed in it. So it's complete political play. This backs up the belief that you should do it exactly the way the Republicans are doing it. If you believe in politics and weasels that way, then what happened here in Illinois yesterday just supports that argument.
I agree. We've been talking about it for months on the Scalia thing to me, and then Senator Kirk had it right. Give him a hearing, and there are a million ways to kill it through the legitimate process if you don't like him, but not the Weasley way. I think that's a very accurate description.
Yeah, so I hate the fact that this yesterday just reinforces people who believe there's no fix in the system because the system is fixed.
This case it is. It's outrageous. Outrageous, and people should be infuriated by it. But you know what? There's an election in November, so get to the polls.
And if you're a Democrat and you truly care about the Democratic Party going forward and you care about the state of Illinois, you will find your friends, you'll get politically activated, and you will find a way to throw Mike Madigan out of his job in your lifetime. People go, well, the Cubs win in my lifetime. You know what the larger question is? Will Madigan still be in Springfield in my lifetime? Because he's got to go. It's over. It's been over for years. And he is using the state as his own piggy bank. My words.
Listen, there are a lot of great Democrats in Springfield, great hardworking public servants. And I think that they're being unfairly treated, too. It's got to change.
Enjoy the day as much as that's possible, because I've done what you're doing. And it's just such a roller coaster. It's a Kathy and Judy thing they talk about every year. You're thrilled for your kid. It's what you said, Pat. It's an adventure, but it's a tough thing. So I'm thinking about you, buddy.
Well, the way to solve that, Steve, is we can play Torrey Pines in January.
How about I'm out there by two?
Maybe, I feel like I should be a spokesperson for your daughter. Let her have some privacy.
Oh, sometime this afternoon. I don't know if it's today, but sometime this afternoon, any school worth its money is going to say, parents, get out.
Right. So, I know. That look that Maeve gave me a year ago, like, Dad, would you please just leave?
Leave.
Did I tell you what they said at Wesleyan?
No.
Wesleyan, we drop Amy off at Wesleyan, and there's a parents' family thing, and we're sitting there. And the president at the time of Wesleyan says, here's what we don't do here. I got a call from a mom who said, my son's not a morning person. Would you call him to wake him up for his 8 o'clock class? And the president of the university said, no, I'm sorry, we don't do that. That's part of independence, is learning he could do that. And he said, so with that, I'm going to politely ask all the moms and dads here to get out.
Yeah.
Because we're going to meet with the students, and they got to get up and go to class in the morning.
That's a nice way to say bye.
Well, bye.
Leave.
Good luck, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Steve. See you guys. Bye.
We should also salute the University of Chicago. The University of Chicago, with a letter that went viral last night, a letter that congratulates you for getting into the University of Chicago. Well, not you two. You're not in. And neither am I. But in the process of writing the letter to the kids at the University of Chicago, very well-written letter, which we ought to post if we haven't done it already, at Cochran Show on Twitter and on Facebook at Steve Cochran Show, which says we will not be putting up safe spaces for you as a student here. We will not be, what is it, trigger points? Is that the phrase? We will not be recognizing trigger points. This is where a professor at the beginning of a class has to say, I'm going to use words that could be a trigger for you. So if you want to leave now, you can leave, and I won't penalize you for not being in the class today. He said, we welcome different ideas. We welcome the discussion of different ideas, and we welcome things that might make you uncomfortable here.
Yeah, we're not going to coddle you.
Yes. This is how you become a grown-up. Welcome to the University of Chicago. It's a great letter. We'll put the letter up. It's 9:52, Bill and Wendy at 10. More in a moment on 720 WGN. All right, Dave, so what's the status of your Chicago Bears? Because Monday, Adam Hogue and Dan Hampton will be on. Don't they play like a 10 a.m. game or something tomorrow?
They play at noon tomorrow, which is sort of their default kickoff time on Sundays in the fall. So it'll feel like a Sunday tomorrow, kind of.
But this is a noon Saturday
noon
game.
Noon start at Soldier Field tomorrow.
Okay. How much time will Cutler see?
Probably into the third quarter is the indication.
Okay. And this is the game where you really get a chance to see the people you expect to see on the field this fall, because in the fourth game, they actually just have fans play.
But pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah, you won't see anybody Thursday night in Cleveland.
No.
You'll see the starters, those that are healthy, will play tomorrow, and they'll see their most extended action of the preseason. Then they'll take the fourth quarter off, at least, and then the last game as well. So.
Okay, can I pull a Mary Sandberg here just for 1 second?
Mm-hmm.
The game's at noon.
Mm-hmm.
Game's what, 3 hours?
Roughly.
Okay, just a note to everyone, go into the game tomorrow, then just go home. No need to hang out, no need to linger, loiter in the neighborhood.
After the game?
Yeah.
Okay,
and get
that's
out
for
quickly,
you. Yeah,
because I don't like a lot of traffic.
That's helpful for you, I understand.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. I regret doing this, but let me say hi to the coach. Not the coach, but the coach. Good morning, coach.
Good morning, Cochran.
Yeah, I just wanted to check in with you as the Bears prepare for their final two exhibition games in the regular season starting in just 2 weeks. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I just left the town of Bow Your Bone Ass. I'm on 57th. I got a ride from a rookie linebacker from West Virginia, Nicky Quitticosco.
His name.
So I'm adding up.
His name is Nicky Quit at Costco.
Yeah, the quarterback's driving, David Fallis.
Okay. Well, you're obviously all over it. Now you seem to be a little more upbeat today than normal. Are you happy to hear from me?
No, I'm just awake, Cochran.
But you
driving
do
me nuts.
You do enjoy our conversations, don't you?
Oh yeah. Oh, there's nothing better. You know, if stupidity was painful, you'd be in agony.
If it's not the Bears in the Super Bowl this year, who do you think might win?
I don't even care. I got to get off of 57.
You're stuck on 57 now. Yeah, that's
you know what, Cochran, if you want to talk to me, do me a favor. Raise your hand and put it over your mouth.
I could possibly do that. Maybe, you know, because people wonder why you're always angry with me. Maybe when you get back to town, maybe we could, you know, have lunch or something.
Oh, yeah, lunch. That's good. You know, you're so fat, even your shadow's got shadows.
So you don't think lunch is a good idea?
Just mean.
I don't think lunch is a good idea.
All right. Well, I'm going to put you on hold now until the season starts. So we'll be checking in with you occasionally. Have a great weekend, Coach.
Yeah, whatever. Breathe.
Oh, hey, at least he told you to breathe instead of don't breathe.
I don't even know what that means. Bill and Wendy next.